WPFW, Washington.
Mike?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Say what you say, say what?
I don't want to be like Mike.
Before Magic's knees go permanently south for the winter.
I don't want to be like Mike.
Changing up the guard quicker than fear brings down doo-doo. Bro.
He never saw Elgin Baylor play during his day or Oscar Robinson.
Flash the dice roll back. The big O was jackknifing through all them bodies.
I didn't know nothing about it.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the collision.
Hey, hey, hey.
He's Atan Thomas. Been in the NBA for 11 years and in the struggle for, it seems like, 11 decades. He is a marathon fighter for a better world. How you doing, Atan?
I'm doing pretty good, Dave. How you doing over there?
Yeah, I'm doing fantastic. Not everybody in this world is, but I could be doing a lot worse. Also got my man Chuck Modiano. How you doing, Chuck?
DZ, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Well, it's an interesting day for sure. I got to tell you, because first and foremost, we have some good news to start the show. And people who listen to WPFW know that we've been following very closely the case of Christian Smalls and what is happening to the one-time Amazon labor union leader in Israel. Chuck, can you speak a little bit about who Christian Smalls is, what has been going on in Israel, and frankly, what you will be doing tomorrow morning?
Yeah, listen, Christian Smalls, he's known as the Amazon labor leader who helped orchestrate and start the first strike against Amazon. And he, you know, became really famous for that, as he should, which is wonderful. And I encourage, well, and there's a documentary about that that people should see called Union. But that's not why we're talking about Christian Smalls now. You know, I had the pleasure to meet him at the People's Conference for Palestine last year and ask him a lot of questions about, you know, why are you fighting for Palestine? And he told me he was losing thousands of followers. He told me that it harmed him in the labor union movement. He's somebody who could have rode the mainstream wave on union. But what he did is he chose what's right. He went to Palestine, and he has most recently been on the Freedom Flotilla as part of a 21 crew, person crew on the Handala. And he was detained, as almost all people were of the 21 people, but he was trying to bring aid to people in Gaza because they weren't getting aid. They were getting shot down by the GHF. We could talk about that. But in doing so, he was detained, but he was the only one who was beaten, according to all reports. And he's the only black man there. So I think was you're seeing some of the synergy of Zionism and white supremacy in real time. And he was finally released after a lot of pressure. He was finally released, and he should be arriving into Newark Airport around 8:20 in the morning. You know, I'm going to hop on a bus overnight and make sure He's going to have a good crowd welcoming him in. And, you know, nothing positive things to say, because what he did is he has children. He put his body on the line. And we say that a lot, right? You know, people have said, you've said that about me, but I've never felt actually my body was on the line. Tear gas isn't a body on the line. But when you risk going into an Israeli prison, and you're a black man on top of it, you know, being American will not save you. Being American, there are 9 Americans who've been killed since 2022, including famous Palestinian American journalist Shireen Abu Akla, who is famous. And there have been very white workers of the World Central Kitchen who have been killed, and none have received accountability. So when Christian Smalls, a black man, risks his own safety and is abducted in an Israeli prison, there is some very serious risk there. To bring attention to what's happening. And I think we have to acknowledge that risk.
And now he's coming home. And Chuck, let's play a clip, if we can, of Christian Small in his own words, speaking to Maximilian Alvarez, a friend of mine, at the Real News Network. We've got a clip of this interview that took place before Chris took the trip over, I believe, right before he was about to leave. So perhaps we could play that clip right now and people can get a sense of Christian Smalls in his own words.
I have to ask this last question, man, because you mentioned that you're aware of the very real threats to your safety and even to your life on this mission. If this is your last mission, like, what do you want your message to the world to be with this mission?
As a father, that's the one thing I don't want to happen is my kids being in the world that we live in right now. Every time a Palestinian child dies, a piece of humanity dies with it. And that's words of Diago, who was on the Mad League. You know, and that's real. You know, we should be ashamed to sit by and stand by and watch these innocent people be slaughtered every day, live stream. And I had enough of it. Every day I open up my Instagram, every day I open up my Twitter, all we see is death. And I know as a father, as a civilian, I can't stand with it. The U.S. citizens that are watching this, your taxpaying dollars are going towards this genocide, whether you like it or not. You can either be complicit or you can speak up and use anything in your power, because we all have a role to play. And I encourage everybody to reach out to your U.S. representatives, whoever they may be, progressive or not, left or right, and try to amplify to keep all eyes on the Handala, because that's what's going to keep us safe as Americans, as volunteers on this this mission. Everything that we're doing is legally deemed by the International Court of Justice last year, and they have no right to intercept us or kidnap us and take us to prison. We are not setting set for Israel. We're going to Palestine, and we need everybody to know the facts and the truth, and use whatever platform you can to amplify that. Hopefully we can have a safe passage and I can see you guys back at home. It could be my last time talking or last time being on a mission forever, but I hope that people will remember and know that once again, this is a world that we do not want to live in. And that's what we have to fight for, humanity. Gaza is showing us how to love.
Amen to that. That's Christian Smalls, everybody. Formerly the head of the Amazon Labor Union, currently on his way home from an Israeli prison where he was beaten for being a part of the Freedom Flotilla, trying to get food to a people who are being subject to a genocide right now on the brink of full-scale starvation, something that it seems like the entire world at long last is waking up to. Etan Thomas, what's your response to the Christian Small story, hearing his words and just seeing this bravery on display, what people are feeling like they are being pushed towards if we are actually going to save lives in Gaza and the West Bank?
I mean, I think it's so important, and I'm so glad that we're highlighting him. And I posted about him a few days ago when I saw it. But I think it's important because there's a lot of misinformation going on here in the United States as far as what actually is going on over there. Mm-hmm. And I think this speaks right in the face of that. I saw a tweet from Bruce Pearl, the head coach of Auburn, and he's saying and creating a narrative and repeating a narrative that just isn't true You know, he's creating a narrative that there is aid being given to the Palestinians, and America is aiding in this and assisting and everything. It's like a completely different. He responded to a tweet from Barack Obama, who he finally did say something. It's taken him a while, I gotta say, with Barack Obama, it took him a little bit, but he finally did say something. And I just want to read those because it's important to have all the right information, and we don't get the right information in this country. Whether we turn on MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, wherever, we're getting a skewed information. That's why what we do here on WPFW is so important. But let me read this real quick, and I'll read it quickly. Barack Obama tweeted, "While a lasting resolution to the crisis in Gaza must involve a return of all the hostages and a cessation of Israel's military operations, these articles underscore the immediate need for action to be taken to prevent the travesty of innocent people dying of a preventable starvation." So then Bruce Pearl retweeted it and said, "You gave billions to Iran and Hamas, creating the mess, and not one word from you calling for them to release the hostages," even though he literally just said that on the tweet. But he said, "Surrender and end the war." He said, "Tell Hamas to, one, quit stealing and reselling aid, two, stop attacking GHF workers who are feeding Gazans, and three, leave and end suffering." Now, this is the head coach of Auburn, okay? This is, and it's... He is disseminating lies and untruths while we're sitting there watching entire ships being hijacked by the Israeli government for trying to deliver aid. He's telling us, and you see it repeated, you know, so much throughout mainstream media, that that's not what's happening. That is fake news. That what we're reporting is not really the truth. And it's just like, it's just amazing to me that the right, I mean, it's not amazing to me because we've been seeing it, you know, for a very long time, but they will repeat any lie and just accept it as the reality and then argue from that point of their created lie. And that's just, it's just an amazing concept to me that happens. But with Christian Smalls putting his life on the line, literally in the face and the opposition of what they tell us that is not happening, and he's literally hijacked. They're literally showing video, the different people that were hijacked on the ship, and they're showing, listen, this is what's happening to us. And then they're telling us, no, that's all a lie. And that's just, but I'm glad that Christian Smalls is coming home. Much respect to you, Chuck, for all the work that you're doing. And it's pointing out the part that he is the only one who was beaten. That presents a very unique element to this whole discussion. I don't want to go too long, but it, him being a black man and doing this, and sometimes I see on social media, you know, some people saying, okay, well, this isn't our problem. Why are we worried about this? We have our own issues to worry about. And there's this notion of dividing. You see it with everything that's going on with ICE. And I think that some of the people who are doing this are planted agents. I really do. But they're literally trying to divide and saying that this shouldn't be something that we're concerned about. Injustice to anyone is something that we should be concerned about. I don't see how anyone with a heart, with half a heartbeat, could look at what's going on over there in this genocide and not be outraged and not be devastated by it. Okay, and then I'll be quiet now.
No, please don't. You know, we should circle back to the Bruce Pearl question in just a moment. But really quick, Chuck, bringing this to you, we have seen in the past these remarkable connections that have been made between, say, Ferguson protesters and people in Gaza, exchanging information, using social media, building solidarity. Angela Davis's incredibly important book about freedom is a constant struggle, connecting Ferguson and Gaza, or people like Michael Bennett who have made those connections, NFL players who have refused these Israeli state-sanctioned trips so they could see the lie of apartheid and basically spread the lies that just a mendacious, bloodthirsty coward like Bruce Pearl is going to spread and use his platform to spread. But we'll get back to Bruce Pearl. But first, Chuck, to take it to you, even though we've had these connections in the past, I definitely see what Atan's saying, particularly in the wake of the recent elections, where you did see a big section of Kamala Harris supporters, people much more in that center Democratic Congressional Black Caucus circle get very mad at young people who said, I'm not going to vote for somebody unless they're going to stand up to the genocide. Now, I don't want to relitigate the lesser evil debate or Trump being worse than Harris would have been. That's less the point to me than what Atan is raising about the idea of people seeing what's happening to Christian Smalls and understanding Zionism in the context of white supremacism, which is never, ever discussed in the analysis of what's happening over there on the mainstream media.
I mean, absolutely. And I think you said at the end, Zionism within the construct of white supremacism. And that's what you saw. So there was worry that Christian Smalls would be treated differently. Yep. Ethiopian Jews in Israel are treated differently, have over double the incarceration rate. I could go back to sterilization. We have previous examples, many examples of anti-Black racism. These aren't separate things. And we don't have to even go back to Ferguson. I think it's actually more ever-present. If you follow the Stop Cop City movement that started in Atlanta, and now we have cop cities that are being planned for in 90 different cities, they will tell you, they will say these are mini Gazas, and they're using the technology, whether it's Palantir or the surveillance technology, to use on Americans, starting with Black Americans right here. I learned that recovering the police terror movement and the folks in Atlanta that wanted to stop facility, whatever you want to call it, death camp, from being built. And this is what is happening. And if we're not making, like, it's not a symbolic connection. It's not just a moral connection. It's a very tangible connection with the weapons, the military people, and the surveillance. Atlanta is the most surveilled in the world, are coming home to roost. So it's not just an injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere. It's a very specific direct line to the police state, an international police state that's coming home. And I want to take it one step further because, Tom mentioned GF. Tom said a lot of things, but I have to focus on GHF because Christian Smalls' trip and the Freedom Flotilla comes in the wake of this thing called a Gaza humanitarian, and I'm putting my fingers in quotes. You can't see that because we're on radio, but Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, which is an American foundation, which is, we have video of people from GHF killing Palestinians looking for food. They're dropping bags. There may be 60,000 Palestinians looking for food. They may drop a 4,000 bags, and you have 10 minutes to pick up that bag. And if you don't, it's really out of Squid Game. And the light goes on, and there's a loudspeaker, and after 10 minutes, they will start shooting at you. And they have killed a number of Palestinians. I think we're over 1,000 now. So much so that GHF own contractors and former military, notably Anthony Aguilar, has been a whistleblower and went on Democracy Now! And other places last week and said, this is the worst I've ever seen. I've never seen civilians killed this way. Now, hear what I'm saying. This is a man who worked 25 years in the military, and the worst civilian treatment and casualties come from an aid operation. I'm hoping everyone's getting what I just said. 25 years in the military, and the worst civilian treatment and murder that he has seen is in an aid operation operated both by the IDF and GHF, an American company. And as an American company, they are hand in hand. As one Palestinian told in the Palestinian youth movement recently, last week, was at John Acree's house. John Acree is the interim executive director in Vienna, Virginia, and protested at his home, saying you're a war criminal, and passed out flyers and said your neighbor is a war criminal. And so, and what one person from the Palestinian youth movement told me was that we could no longer deny that this is a joint genocide with the Israel and America. They're hand in hand, end quote. And we have to understand that. It's not Israel, it's Israel and America.
Let me ask you real quick, Chuck, real quick. Who is it that you said, because I you said so much, and I just learned so much that I didn't know. Who is it that you said that deemed the GHF as, you know, the worst civilian treatment and murder that he has ever seen? Who did you say that said that?
Anthony Aguilar, and he's a whistleblower. He was on Democracy Now! And a few other places. It happened this week. Anthony Aguilar, he quit the GHF, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago. There's video out of you know, here's the video that I've seen of many. You're over a hill and you see shooting. And in the shooting, you hear, "I think I got one." Bang, bang, bang. And then the guy goes, "Yeah, boy." Like, this is GHF workers shooting at civilians. We should probably play that video next, that audio next week. So this is what we're seeing. So Anthony Aguilar, if anybody Google him, this is a whistleblower for the 25-year military veteran. And he's saying what Palestinians have been saying, what activists have been saying. And I think what we're seeing in the last 2 months is from mainstream media, they are covering their butts. We're seeing reports to Israeli human rights organization, Betzalem and Physicians for Human Rights have issued reports on Monday verifying all the reports we received last year from every other human rights organization, the ICC and the UN. There's never been more intellectual basis for a genocide, legal basis in real time with live stream videos to boot than now. We have more information than the Holocaust. And when someone is a Holocaust denier, we ostracize them. I ostracize them. I condemn them. I don't even talk to them. But now we're forced to have conversations on something where we have more evidence. We didn't have a live stream of the Holocaust. We did not have that, but we have that now as well, including these reports in real time, including whistleblowers. So anyone who says there's not starvation going on, and Anthony Aguilar says the same thing, doesn't know what they're talking about and is worse than a Holocaust denier.
Well, it's horrible what Bruce Pearl is doing in terms of spreading this kind of very, very obvious obfuscation and lies to make people think, well, maybe there isn't mass starvation going on. Or you think about Bret Stephens of the New York Times a week ago, writing a whole column called, in a very sort of condescending tone, "No, it's not a genocide," which of course I think was written only because the previous week, first of all, here's Bret Stephens. He's a New York Times columnist who is a total mediocre know-nothing who lives in the United States. With terrific wealth. The previous week, an Israeli human rights genocide expert who was in the IDF wrote a column that said, yes, there is a genocide. I mean, if it wasn't so tragic, it's almost like a comedy. Like, let's find the most bulletproof, pardon the expression, person to say that there is a genocide. He's Israeli. He was in the IDF. He studies genocides for a living. He is a professor. He says there is a genocide. And yet somehow that's negated by Bret Stephens saying, nope. But it's also a condemnation of the New York Times that they feel like they can't publish something by someone on the ground who is, heaven forfend, Palestinian, to speak about what is happening. But at the same time, I could see what the New York Times is doing. They're trying to say to their readers, look, even this guy is saying there's a genocide, but then they don't even have the courage to let that stand. They bring in Bret Stephens, who's much more known to their readership, to say, no, there isn't. But then the week after that, Ross, and I always mispronounce his name, hardcore conservative forever, he's now saying, like, using the G word on the genocide tip. And you're seeing all these, Rahm Emanuel, who used to be in the IDF, for goodness sakes, is talking about what Israel is doing. Two things, and I'm curious what y'all think about this, that you're seeing a lot of, like, Democratic senators just voted to cut aid to Israel. It was 27-17 in favor of cutting aid to Israel among Democratic senators. Those 17 should be roundly condemned, people like Cory Booker in that group, John Fetterman, of course. But throwing this to you, Etan, or to you, Chuck, I'm saying all this because I think it speaks to two things, that because we really do have to wrestle with this. All these Democrats who've been cheering on this genocide are now saying, whoa, what's going on here? Two things it speaks to. One is, my goodness, fellas, the scale of the crisis there must be even worse than we know. I mean, because if it is a genocidal situation there right now with the starvation, to the likes of which it could destabilize the region, the world, outrage everybody, and frankly, put Israel in a political straitjacket for the next 100 years, then that is one reason why they're speaking out. The other reason is, I think, because frankly, I think it all comes down to Mamdani in New York and what the candidacy that he has run, and the fact that we now know crystal clear that one of the big points of attraction to one of the great upset primary victories in the history of this country comes from the fact that he was really the only one, save Brad Lander, to actually call for an end to the genocide. And also, the other thing about Mamdani that I think it's also revealed is that good luck being a Democrat, a pro-genocide Democrat, and getting anybody younger than the age of 35 to vote for you. I mean, generationally, they are wiped out if they don't stand up to what young people consider to be the moral cause of their generation. It's like Democrats in the late 60s who were calling for escalations in Vietnam, and they did exist. You had no shot with young people at that point. So, Etan, I take it to you, like, before we get into the Bruce Pearlism of it all, the lies of it all, what have you been seeing that as well, this shift among people talking about it who we didn't hear talking about it before, and their motivations, which I think look very specious, but maybe we should be thinking less about their motivations and more about how do we push forward and actually end this horrific situation. What are your thoughts on the general state, which frankly has changed dramatically since our discussion even a week ago?
There is so much, you know. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break, take a quick breather, because there's so much. This isn't like a quick answer. There's a lot to talk about with this. But indeed, let's take a quick break. And I always like to promote this young Palestinian rapper, MC Abul, and the just listen closely to the things that he's saying and what he's talking about as far as life for a young Palestinian in Gaza right now. So let's take this quick break, and we'll be right back with more of the Collision, where sports and politics collide.
I'm exhausted. Last night I couldn't sleep, but when I did, I could hear bombs in my dreams. Nightmare situation. How could they be so evil? Making mortars out of children and innocent people. We expect the bombs, not knowing where next. Huddle in the corner of my room, trying to protect my little brother as the building shakes like it's possessed. But nothing stronger than the will of the oppressed. I bomb back with my lyrics and rhymes, living the times, trying to break the Palestinian minds. What's hiding in the clouds hanging over my head? My dad risks his life outside to buy bread. The fourth war in my 12th year. At this stage, I'm numb, though I haven't feel scared. There's nothing I can do in this case to stay safe. I'm brave, even though this house could be in my grave. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location. Shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location. Shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. Mothers mourn, fighting with grief. White sheets covered by his death. Lie on the streets, buildings turn to ash. But my mind is made of steel, so it doesn't take much for me to heal. Won't lose the will to live or lose our minds. My auntie lost her home, so she lost her life. But she is still alive, but traumatized by the bombs that flew in and dropped that night. My sister couldn't sleep, tried to stop her cries. I said it was fireworks, I was telling her lies. Where's the compassion? This is heartless. It's like they want us all living in darkness. Cutting off water and electricity for hours. They're knocking towers, but that's not knocking the power that I have in my pen. When I'm writing, I'm unstoppable. The microphone is the only escape possible, cause that's the way that I can speak my mind. I wonder how does the fire fight or pile asleep at night. Knowing he can turn the city upside down all of a sudden. Slaughtering families with the push of a button. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location. Shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation. I want freedom for the population. 2 million prisoners living in this location. Shouting at the wall, but nothing is ever changing. That's life under an occupation.
Mind blown. We are back here on The Collision. He's Etan Thomas. I'm Dave Zirin. He's Chuck Modiano. I'm Dave Zirin here at your home for Jazz and Justice, 89.3 FM WPFW, trying to change this world one broadcast at a time. Still much to discuss. Etan Thomas, though, before we start rolling, tell us again who that was, because that was just unbelievable.
Yeah, young Palestinian rapper MC Abu. You can look him up on YouTube. He's been rapping for years. He started like when he was about eight, talking about all of this. And this isn't new. I mean, you know, I know it's gone to a whole different level, but this occupation, the murder, the killing, the everything like that, this isn't new. This is literally what he's grown up with his whole life. So this is the reality for him. So really talented. Everybody check him out. And I'll post him when I post about everything. MC Abu.
Amazing. Amazing. So Etan Thomas, last left it with you. There's actually a whole other issue in D.C. that I really want to talk to you about, involving also Israel and a certain former D.C. icon on the basketball scene.
Yeah,
got to jump into it because I know people want to hear some thoughts you have to say. It's amazing to me, first of all, that this story, frankly, intersects with everything we've just been talking about. But I'm sure folks have heard the news, former Washington Wizard All-Star and community icon, you have to say, Gilbert Arenas. Gilbert Arenas, for folks who haven't heard, has been indicted on several counts, each count giving 5 years behind bars. I think the total he could get is 15, on charges that he rented out his Encino home to members of the Israeli mafia so they could put on illegal card games with all sorts of illegal happenings that one might imagine at an illegal card game. Now, Gilbert skipped out of the courtroom. I don't know if you saw this, and was on his Instagram already trying to build that Q rating, because that's Gilbert trying to get those clicks, saying that he had nothing to do with it. But I have to tell you, Etan, a lot of people at this story are looking at it from the perspective of, oh, this is like when Gilbert got in trouble for that card game in the Wizards locker room, infamously, with somebody I know you know well, Javaris Crittenden. Right. But that to me is not the part of this story that I at all find the most interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, to me, it's like, I was like, so we've got the Israeli mafia
in Los Angeles? Right.
I mean, I'm a mafia guy, man. I mean, that was news to me. I was like, okay, so not only are we dealing with this war overseas, but they're getting some of our most beloved basketball players pinched. I know that's not the best way to look at it, but to me, it was still like, wow, we're dealing with the organized crime of military assault and genocide overseas. And we also have, I mean, it just, on a very base level in Encino, California, the Israeli mob taking over Gilbert's mansion. I mean, my brain almost exploded.
Yeah, that's a lot. I'm gonna be honest with you. I don't even really know how to respond to that. You know, it's looking at the details of it, and you know, it came across last night, and I'm looking at it. I'm like, wait, the what? And I was like, hold on, let me start. Maybe I didn't read it right. Let me put my glasses back on and something like that. The Israeli mob. What the devil is Gilbert doing with the Israeli mob? So I had the same reaction that everybody else had. You know what I mean? Complete, surprise, shock, everything else. And I don't know if it's quite over. I know he skipped out of the police station where he was. He said he had nothing to do with it. You know, he just rented out the his home, I guess. But I don't know if that necessarily clears him. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't, I have no idea. But I don't think this is the last that we'll hear of this. But it's frustrating to me because I knew Gilbert Arenas on a personal level. So there's two sides of Gilbert Arenas. And I always told this to everyone. There was Gilbert Arenas, who I've had plenty of conversations with, you know, sat in my hotel room, we're on the road, went out to eat with, discussed different things. I've had him on different panels. I was on a panel I had him on my panel at USC. We had great discussions. He's talking about in depth and different topics and things of that nature. But then there's Agent Zero or No Chill Gill. And it's a created like character. It's not who he is. And the world sees No Chill Gill. And so the world doesn't really get to see Gilbert Arenas. And he's comfortable with that. And it's really an interesting dynamic that I have seen since I first met him back in, 2003 or whatever it was. And he likes attention too much. And I always equated, and this was even before the recent switch with him, but I always said that he was the Kanye West of the NBA because he's incredibly talented, but just loves attention too much. And if everybody's not looking at him, he's like the little kid that'll turn over the chair, turn over the table so everybody can look at him. And it's something that I've never really seen before up close to this level. And it's consistent with everything that I've known about him from being his teammate. Now, that being said, the Israeli mob, that's a new one. I don't really know how to, you know what I mean? Even conceptualize that part, you know, but when I see him say different outlandish things, and it gets the attention. I was like, yeah, that's the Agent Zero that I knew. And it might not even be things that he even believes, but he knows that it'll get attention. He knows that it'll get everybody looking at him, you know, everybody talking about him. And he kind of thrives on that. And it's an interesting dynamic. But as far as this particular with the Israeli mob with the gambling, I don't, you know, that's like a movie. So that's going to have to be a stay tuned for everybody. I have no idea.
Fascinating though it is. I would also add on to this that another person you know well, Etan, and are very friendly with, who actually is not that friendly with Gilbert. Where I was going.
Yeah, I knew.
I'm gonna get not say any of the cusses or any
of
the jabs that Kwame said after Gilbert was arrested, but in the middle of Kwame's at times very entertaining rant about what happened to Gilbert, he did say one thing that I thought was actually a really important thing to say, which actually I think Kwame might have said something unintentionally. He's talked about the Israeli mafia. And he said, Gilbert, 5 years for each count, the only way you get out of that is by snitching, by saying something. And that's not going to do you too well with the Israeli mob. And I just got to tell you that when Kwame said that, the only reason why it struck me so hard, Etan, is again, I was like, how is Kwame talking about the Israeli mob? I didn't know that existed. And he's talking about it like, yeah, you don't want to mess with the Israeli mob. And it just speaks to me yet again of this idea of criminal rot in our society. Like we talk about the Italian mob. What did it come out of? It came out of the immiseration and destruction of Italy's efforts to form a united country. Because out of that, you have these little fiefdoms develop because there is no police for people to go to. We all know the story of the mafia. So you go to the local strongman to settle your business. That's the roots of organized crime, not just in Italy, but in the world. It comes out of the rot of the governmental system itself. So I'm sorry, that's just where my head is when I'm thinking about like a thriving Israeli mafia that's taking over former NBA superstars' mansions in Encino and running million-dollar card games complete with prostitution and drugs. I can't help but also think to myself, wow, there is no doubt in my mind that the soil of this, lies in Israeli injustice, apartheid, and the belief that crimes do not come from repercussions, are not enjoined with repercussions. Chuck, am I taking this too far?
Oh, you're not taking it too far. I mean, and I can't really speak with any authority more on Gilbert Arenas than a former teammate, Atan Thomas. But you're not taking it too far. And I have a couple of leftover things in me that I got to get out because you said so much, Atan said so much previously. And the first thing is I want to start with is that Atan asked about Anthony Aguilar, the whistleblower, and who was on Democracy Now! And other places. But you could go to Democracy Now! And hear the quote that I'm about to tell you. And his quote was, "What I witnessed in Gaza, I could only describe as a dystopian, post-apocalyptic wasteland. We, the United States, are complicit. We are involved hand in hand in the atrocities and the genocide that is currently undergoing in Gaza. For anyone who says that there is no starvation or mass hunger, or that not only are we at the precipice, but we have stepped over the line of wide-scale famine. To anyone who says that's not happening, shame on you, shame on you. It's inhumane." That's not an activist. That is a military general who worked for GHF. And what you're seeing is a lot of these military generals, now a lot of some in mainstream media, now even a few politicians, are sounding exactly like the activists were back in October 2023, except for one difference, which is the second point I want to make. You said a lot about Democrats. So we have to be honest. If you want a nice speech, then go see your pastor, go to church, do something like that. If you want to know where a politician stands, follow their votes, because there were two key votes. There was one last night, and then there was one last week. And last night, it was about money for weapons. So you saw, I think, the one Democrat who showed the dichotomy, the two people, the multiple personality disorder that is part of the Democratic Party, is Cory Booker, who 4 days ago gave an impassioned speech that included the starvation of Palestinians and how we have to do something, and that we have to have moral clarity, quote unquote. And then we had moral clarity last night. He was one of the Democrats who voted to continue that funding. So this, we have to have that moral clarity. And we have that moral clarity when we know Cory Booker accepts nearly $1 million from AIPAC. So we have to stop looking at Democrat speeches and start looking at their votes, which brings me to the second vote, which was last week. A similar vote about the Iron Dome, sending more money for the Iron Dome while all of this is in the news and happening. And there were only four Democrats in the House who voted against it. So let me shout them out. That's Summer Lee. Summer Lee's been very active. So not only did Summer Lee vote against it, Summer Lee also said free Christian Smalls, the first congressperson to say free Christian Smalls. Rashida Tlaib, same thing. And she said once, she spoke about all of those on the Handela. Rashida, there was Al Green, and then there was Ilhan. That was the four. That was no AOC. I think we have to give up this fantasy about AOC, because AOC is another one like Cory Booker who says one thing and votes another way. When it comes down to it, she votes another way. And we have to be clear on that. And we have to be clear as well about Bernie Sanders. I know some people don't like me saying this, but I have to go where the facts lie. The facts lie is that Bernie Sanders can't say the word genocide, can't say the word apartheid, can't even go for a permanent ceasefire, the legislation that Cori Bush was pushing last year. And so when it comes down to that, he is silent. But not on the campaign trail when he's talking up a lot of things. And his thing that he does is he keeps running, and like last night, the same exact game. He wants to stop funding to Israel, not all weapons, offensive weapons, whatever that means, right? There's a loophole in there. And he does that, and even though it only gets 17 votes or 19 votes or at the most 27 votes, he stays on that path, giving the illusion that he's trying to stop a genocide. But when it comes down to it, in his language, in his words, and his ability to push legal definitions forward, like using the word genocide as legal implications, he is silent. It's so bad that a white nationalist like MTG beat him to the punch. I know people don't like what I'm saying, but it's the truth. These are the facts. And if I'm wrong, then people need to say I'm wrong because my facts are wrong. But these are the facts.
Yeah, I'll just throw something on that before, a little mustard on that before I take it over to a town. One is a point of, I think, of differentiation, Chuck, in terms of how we're arguing about this, that I want to just raise with you.
Sure.
And then something a little bit about President Obama's statement. I want to go through both of those. First, in terms of how we argue it, I hear what you're saying, Chuck, about Cory Booker and AIPAC, $1 million, as you said. I think we have to start to look at these arguments about AIPAC much more in terms of power than money. Cory Booker comes out of Wall Street. Cory Booker could find a way to replace that $1 million. It's not about the $1 million. I know that sounds weird, but trust me, in politics these days, $1 million barely gets you into the club. It's about people feel like their ambition is tied to Zionism on a host of different ways. So if you are an ambitious politician, like a Cory Booker, like a John Fetterman, you are all in with people who are connected through all sorts of areas of government. Taking that $1 million, Chuck, is just your way of telling an entire institution that not only are you for sale, but you can actually provide the receipts to this effect. So I hear the AIPAC straight up money exchange argument. I also feel I think this is so clear now in the wake of what Trump has done with Colombia and the use of anti-Semitism as a way to just destroy people's lives left and right on ridiculous precepts. And frankly, that have nothing to do with anti-Semitism whatsoever. Just saying, oh, now we're now going to control you through this accusation that you're so fearful of. It's them wanting to be on the correct side of the fearful question. And so that's just one thing. The second thing is I've read and reread President Obama's statement. And I have to tell you, we need to push back against statements that are so manicured that they say the word hostages when there is a genocide going on of mass starvation. Like to even say, first, we have to talk about the hostages is, to me, wildly ridiculous, given the scale of the humanitarian crisis that not only we face, but that Israel is causing. Like to speak about hostages when Israelis, the IDF is doing target practice on kids. I don't think you mentioned this, Chuck, but they're talking about even like the bullet formations on the kids they're shooting.
Yeah.
And saying, well, today we're going to do the stomach. Tomorrow we're going to do the head. I mean, there are clustered shots from snipers on unarmed kids. I mean, don't talk to me about hostages, President Obama. The second thing in Obama's statement that really bothered me is there was a certain word that was not in the statement, Chuck. And it begins with P. Palestinians. It's like when you don't name the people getting genocided, when you don't use words like Gaza, it also serves to obfuscate in a way that you never would see with another country. I mean, the pain to which language is twisted to provide the IDF cover from what we are seeing, the monstrosity of what we were seeing. And I'll throw on that the degree to which that is Summerlee still the only person to have mentioned Christian Smalls? The fact that this wasn't a story astounds me when I think of the Palestinian kid who was born in the United States, Palestinian American kid. I wish I had his name on the tip of my tongue, who was just killed a couple weeks ago. He was a Florida kid. You think Ron DeSantis said his name? No. So until we lose the double standard that I think President Obama's statement kind of reflects, which says that like maybe Palestinian lives, genocide stinks, famine stinks, but their lives just aren't on the same level of these other lives in terms of our outrage and our anger. I think any Democratic politician who takes that tack, like as if to say, the famine is terrible, let's first release the hostages and then maybe we'll give people a sandwich.
Right.
That is just a dead
Right.
Sorry, Etan, I went on.
No. I think that was fantastic. I mean, it is so amazing how we're all aligned with what we're talking about. I pitched that I wanted to write an article for The Guardian on this topic, and they didn't want me to write it. And I'm going to pitch it to the Nation. I'll help you pitch because I want to write this. Literally everything that we just talked about, everything that from Obama's statement to Pearl to his incorrect information to the GHF and everything that they really are doing to Anthony Aguilar. I this is the article that I wanted to put together. It's just that The Guardian didn't want to do it. But it's important to be able to hold Democratic officials to the fire. I mean, I see Hakeem Jeffries talking. And that's one name we didn't mention, Chuck. We were talking. I mean, but there's a lot of them. A lot of the Democrats that are falling to this category that they're saying these things that sound nice, right? But then you're looking at another portion where how they vote, or you're looking at another part where and I can't get that image out of my head of Hakeem Jeffries saying Israel now, Israel forever, all of that. And he's and I'm like, what are you doing? But they're accepting funds from. And people always ask me, and I get this question at least a few times a month, why don't I go into politics? Okay? Because I can't play this game.
Right.
I can do that. Right. I don't care how much money that you're going to give to me. I don't care how much, AIPAC. Stand up there and say Israel now, Israel forever, Israel, all of that, and support the right to defend itself and all those different key words that Kamala Harris, I really wish she did not say, but she did. Like, there's no way that I could do that in the middle of a genocide and knowing what is happening currently. I wouldn't be able to look myself in the mirror. Mm-hmm. So the fact that some of these Democratic officials can do that tells us where they stand. And like you said, we don't have to get into the lesser of two evils, discussion or something like that. Just looking at them, that they would do that, it makes me have less respect for them. This is, y'all don't have to say that this is what I'm saying. And I think it is important to hold them to the fire for that. So I'm going to try to write this article. If y'all can help me find a publication, I can write it. But it needs to get out. And I can write it with you in conjunction with you, Dave. We can write it, an article together. However we want to do it, this information, everything that we talked about today needs to get out more.
Love it. Love this idea, Tan. Love the idea of working with this on you. And I won't even ask for a whole separate paragraph about the power of the Israeli mafia in the NBA. But
I'm still leave stuck that on out. The Guardian wouldn't hey, take hey, it. Hey, I'm still hey. Stuck on that one.
I know. That's okay? So crazy.
Hey, but the last time you were rejected, and you're a well-known former basketball player, but even when you were a basketball player and you wanted to write that article showing your opposition to the Iraq war, New York Times wouldn't take you, Post wouldn't take you, nobody would take you, but Dave Zirin writing from
PG County Post, yeah.
PG County Post, that's what brought you together is my understanding. So years later, if you want to say some inconvenient truths, it's a bit difficult to get that published.
It is.
No doubt.
Let me say this before, because I know we only got like half a second left. We are going to be at the Mystics game tonight. Just got the text to say we got the tickets. Ooh. So we are all going to be supporting the Mystics. We're looking to, be interviewing some of them. We want to support them and push what they're trying to do with these labor negotiations, because it's really important. And we're going to keep on doing this. So stay tuned. So we're going to be interviewing some Mystics sometime soon and really supporting them. And it's important that everybody supports them. We talked about it a little bit, but the fact that they're getting 9.3% of the entire BRI, basketball-related income, is absurd and it's insulting, and everybody should be outraged by that. Just want to say that real quick.
I'm so glad you said that. Well, we've reached the end of time. Mystics, here we come. Etan, we got to put some articles together. Let's do this thing.
Yes, sir. Everybody,
Chuck, you do be safe going to Newark, please. Not the least of which from Wayward Plains. For everybody out there listening, please be frosty. We are out of here. Peace. They can't count.
the right price, I put the AR in the Saints' mouth.
Yeah.
Talk about bring it. All the watches and the chains out. Heat, come, I'm De Niro, I got the safe house.
This is culturally inappropriate.
Surrounded by with tears that don't drip.
Talk about
that it. Ain't the ghost that you appeared to go get. Finally got the courage, but you still a hoe. The rest of y'all on my 6 year ago. Every move intentional, the links is atypical.
Like baseball and DR,
you know what the stick'll do.
This is culturally inappropriate.
We got the drop on your shadow. You know we can get to you. The pen to express my dreams and expertise in text I squeeze. Coke spots all over like leprosy. It's a dark spirit tucked behind the flesh you see. Got every single word of the hex I need. The death I breathe, the death I see. Look so good on you, the coffin wood on you. Closed casket cause I'm only sicking wolves on you. Berlinetta horsepower, put them hooves on ya. Blow a half a million LV leather goods on ya. We've been doing this for eons. While you thirsty trying to figure out who you can spill a tea on. I'm in coffee fields, making meals. You get the chills, cause it is real. Now let me rip in, bow tie your surprise. The feeling that you get when you realize it was really you that died and we are so alive. Conspiracy theory, you can't believe it's us. Soul leave your body like a fentanyl rush. Dead on your back with your eyes looking up chandeliers.
This is culturally inappropriate.
Single-handedly boosted rap to its truest place. Speaking candidly, I alone did rejuvenate hip-hop into its newest place. Made it cool for Grammy-nominated LPs from previous generation MCs. And that rings loud and reverberates. It's not fair to them. I'm thinking I deserve the hate. Bring it. Only thing you killing is precious time. Used to clash with Decepticons. I was them deaf and blind. So cancel me before I unleash the Panther me. The Pantheon is a family. We some upstanding G's. The difference between regular spitters and bosses. My principles high. You need a glimpse of me from satellites in orbit. Take sabbaticals on avenues. Break AKs on vacays when we paddle canoes. Follow the leader. Terminator. Hasta la vista. Man of the year. Nasir. Rocking chandeliers.
Wondering how to get WPFW swag in your life? Items that say, I support jazz and justice without saying a word. We've got you covered. Details and browsing at WPFWFM.org. Again, that's WPFWFM.org.
Jazzy Sundays at Anacostia, an 8-week jazz and R&B concert series happening this Sunday, 4 to 6 p.m. in the heart of the Anacostia Arts District at 1234 Marion Barry Avenue. Food vendors will be on site and lawn chairs are welcome. Jazzy Sundays in Anacostia runs through Sunday, September the 7th. Details at anacostiabid.org.
Are you in the process of writing or updating your will, trust, or estate plan? We invite you to consider adding WPFW as a beneficiary through a charitable bequest. Bequests can take many forms and are usually the largest and most impactful gift a donor will ever make. Your bequest will help to ensure the programming WPFW has provided for almost 50 years will continue into the future. More info available by email at plannedgiving@wpfw.org or by phone at 202-588-0999, extension 344. Or you can let us know you've already included PFW in your plans through those same channels so we can add your name to our growing list of legacy listeners. We are listener supported. We are jazz and justice. And because of your support, we are WPFW. Are you in the process of writing or updating your will, trust, or estate plan? We invite you to consider adding WPFW.